Hello, everyone. This is Elisa Montali with the National Quality Forum. I'd like to welcome you to the September Measure Developer webinar. Before I turn it over to my colleague, Karen Pace, who will be going over the comments that we received on our measure evaluation guidance, I did want to go over a couple of housekeeping items with you. First, we wanted to let you know that we are streaming the webinar on the web, and so if you will be listening to the webinar via the web, if you could just turn down your volume. And if you are not, hopefully you've joined us on this conference line. Also, we wanted to thank all of the developers that took part in our week-long Kaizen event last week. It was a wonderful event. We received a lot of feedback. It's just the start of improvement activities at NQF, and so we'll definitely be following up with all of you to let you know about our progress and our next steps. And we also wanted to, again, lastly, thank you for your patience as we wait to confirm our projects for upcoming maintenance. We, as you know, are in the stretch, we feel, of negotiations with the final stretch with on negotiations with HHS, and we hope to, by this time, next month, have confirmation of the projects, and we'll be following with you, as Ashley and Marcel and I have mentioned in previous webinars, to schedule one-on-one conference calls to discuss your maintenance schedule and also to discuss any updates to the consensus development process that will impact your work this year. And so with that, I will turn it over to Karen Pace.
Hello, everyone. We thought we'd just take some time today to review with you the comments that we received on the updated guidance. We discussed this with the CSAC and the HITAC last Tuesday afternoon, and I'll fill you in on some of their decisions during that call, though we are not completely finished. And then we'll have some time for questions or further comments from you. Evan's going to pull up the CSAC memo, and this was posted on the project webpage as well as for the CSAC meeting. And the comments table, all the comments received were also posted, so those are accessible on the project page for this report. Okay, so we put these into themes, and I think I'll just go through them in the order that they are in the CSEC memo. So those of you who are on the webinar will be following along in the memo, and those of you who aren't on the webinar can access them directly yourself. But we'll start on the bottom of page two. Well, first of all, I'll just say that we received a lot of comments, and we appreciate the thoughtfulness that went into the comments and the questions and that were raised, the suggestions that were made. Those are always very useful to us as we continue to work on this. So the first theme was about e-measure endorsement and a lack of support for required testing in three EHRs, each with three sites. As we noted in the draft guidance, this was proposed with two contexts. One was in the context of also proposing a process to approve trial measures, and also in the context that we had been told that ONC was requiring this from their contractors. So on the call with CSEC and HITAC on Tuesday, Kevin Larson clarified that ONC is requiring testing in three EHR systems, not and does not require three sites per system. So ONC requirements are as minimal as three sites, each with a different EHR system. So the HITAC and CSAC discussed this for quite some time. In terms of different options. One is not specifying any minimum at all, specifying two as a minimum, and specifying three as the minimum to be consistent with ONC. The way they landed was to require three EHR systems to be consistent with ONC, they thought it probably didn't make sense for NQF to have a lower requirement than the CMS requirement of 3 EHR systems. So we will, I'll get through all the e-measure stuff and then we'll stop and take some comments. So one question to you all will be whether that is consistent with your understanding, especially from those of you who have contracts with CMS or ONC. The second theme was about the endorsement, e-measure endorsement criteria, and we just wanted to go through this and confirm these things. There were a few things that needed to be included. The first was, Evan, if you scroll down a little bit, one of the things that we neglected to put into the requirements for e-measures under endorsement was the use of value sets vetted through the National Library of Medicine. And we, because we had noted that for the trial measures, we needed to be consistent here with measures submitted for endorsement. Some of the commenters noted that the National Library of Medicine wasn't currently accepting new value sets. Our understanding is that that will be resolved pretty shortly, but also we put in some language here that if value sets are not vetted by the VSAC, to explain why and plans for submitting them for approval. So we recognize there will probably be a lag time with being able to do that. Okay. The other thing, I think the rest of this was pretty much what was published in the guidance. One of the things that we did do, though, is to also include the guidance on testing samples that are consistent with our guidance for other measures from the Measure Testing Task Force report. So this is not new. It's just that this also applies to e-measures. And, again, we weren't sure what the final outcome of the CSAC HITECH decision was going to be in regarding minimum numbers. Okay. Next page. The other thing that we received several comments about was about the comparability of performance scores between using a measure specified as an e-measure and perhaps a comparable measure using claims or medical record abstraction. And we're wanted to clarify that our assumption is going to be that if measures are specified by different data sources, that they will not produce comparable results unless it's demonstrated to the contrary, and that they would need to be submitted as different measures. One of the suggestions that was made on the CSAC HITECH call was that we should just automatically have different measures with different data sources. And this is something that we'll continue to explore here at NQF. But regardless, we need to definitely come up with a numbering system where we could relate measures that are doing the same thing but with different data sources. And again, you know, the harmonization and competing measures issues will apply with e-measures as well as other types of measures. And then the last thing that I want to talk about is approval of trial measures. And there was a lot of support from the comments for such an approval. We had a lot of discussion about this with the HITECH and CSAC, and they haven't made a final decision about this. One of the things that became clear from the comments, which we appreciated, was asking for more clarity around the process. And in this memo, we talked about some potential options for the process, which appear on page 7. But the CSAC and HITECH thought we needed to have a little bit more discussion about this before they made a final decision. One of the key questions that came up is whether measure developers would be interested in submitting measures for approval as trial measures and what purpose it would serve. So I'll just reiterate some of the context for this was given the difficulty with obtaining testing sites that can implement these measures and collect the data so that the developer actually has some data on which to do reliability and validity testing, that having approval as a trial measure would hopefully facilitate willingness of vendors and providers to implement the measure to facilitate that kind of testing. So the question came up is whether that indeed would happen, whether having approval as a trial measure would actually put some impetus behind people being willing to participate in data collection and testing. So I'd be interested in hearing any of your thoughts about that. And then some of the things we talked about is, and also brought up in the comments, is whether approval as a trial measure would have an expiration, and we've talked about perhaps automatically expiring after 3 years. And the other big question was, what would be submitted and reviewed after the trial measure period or when the testing was completed? And there were a couple of options that we talked about. One was, either just reviewing the measure testing, but then have endorsement maintenance apply 3 years from the original approval date. Or another option would be to submit and evaluate all criteria and then not have endorsement maintenance kick in until 3 years from that date. The other possibility is for the measure developer to decide which of those options they prefer, and that might depend on how quickly after the approval date you actually were ready to submit testing. So I'm going to stop there before we go on to the other items and just see if you have any additional comments or questions about the e-measures, either the endorsement criteria or this potential for approval of trial measures.
Amy?
At this time, if you have any questions or comments, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, for questions or comments, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We have no questions or comments at this time.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll proceed onward, and then we'll have time again for questions later on. So if something occurs to you, feel free to bring it up later as well. The fourth theme, which is on the bottom of page 7, was, again, we identified different views on evidence related to health outcomes and patient-reported outcomes. This is something that comes up fairly frequently whenever the issue of evidence and outcomes comes up. Some commenters specifically agreed with the current guidance that the CSAC recently reaffirmed that for health outcomes and PROs, requirement is to submit information on the connection between the particular health outcome or PRO and healthcare actions. Either processes or structures, services, interventions, and to provide a rationale. And others noted that they wished to apply the same criteria that we use for processes and structures and intermediate clinical outcomes about submitting information from the systematic review of the evidence. So just to let you know, the CSAC definitely reaffirmed that they wanted to uphold the current guidance, which treats health outcomes and PROs a bit differently than the process and structure and intermediate clinical outcome measures. And the other thing is that we, based on some of the comments we received about what is a plausible rationale, change the language in the algorithm for the steering committee, and this is up on the webinar. So it would be that the steering committee agrees that the relationship between the measured outcome or PRO and at least one healthcare action is supported by the stated rationale and the diagram or description of the path between the outcome and the healthcare processes or structures. So again, there's no way to completely remove subjectivity, or I guess the other way to talk about it is steering committee judgment, but the measure submission form does ask for the developer to submit both that diagram or description of the pathway and to provide a rationale. Obviously, the rationale is often supported by evidence, and we would encourage developers to note the evidence that supports any particular actions that just provides more strength for the proposal, but it will be evaluated based on the rationale as currently stated in the criteria. Theme five was need for further clarification regarding guidance when information on quantity, quality, and consistency of the evidence is not available. So a couple things came up in the comments, and one was to note what to do when there is an empirical evidence, but it just has not been systematically reviewed. So we definitely wanted to tackle the problem of performance measures that were based on guidelines that were stated to be evidence-based and based on a systematic review of the evidence, but the information to provide a summary of the quantity, quality, and consistency would not was not available. And I think we had pretty positive response to addressing that particular issue. But one of the things that came up, as I mentioned, was sometimes it may be that there is empirical evidence, it just has not yet been systematically reviewed. So we wanted to be sure to include that, and I'll show you that in a minute. So basically, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. That was actually theme six. So Evan, would you go down to that one, and then I'll come back to theme five. So what we did is we added another section of the algorithm to specifically address this issue. And just as with not having the quantity, quality, consistency information from a systematic review, the highest rating that this type of evidence could get would be moderate. The other thing that this section did was to do a little bit more clarification regarding the exception. So the big change here is on section 9, our box 9, that we just added some additional questions that were suggested in some of the comments. Are there perceived detriments to endorsing the measure? We're actually going to take out the any. And the examples of that would be focus attention away from more impactful practices, that it would potentially be more costly without certainty of benefit, or divert resources from developing more impactful measures as some examples that the steering committee could consider. Okay. All right, sorry for jumping ahead. So let's go back to theme five. The main question here that, or the main comment here was, I think, again, there was pretty much support for you know, having some mechanism to deal with when the quantity, quality, and consistency was not provided. And one commenter was concerned that perhaps we were just accommodating poor measure submissions, but I think on the other hand, there was support and recognition that sometimes that's just not available. And so the thing that we wanted to be sure to clarify is that in that situation, again, the highest rating that the evidence could receive is moderate, and that would be only for high-grade evidence. So it really does put a bit more onus on selecting focus of measurement that really is indicated by high-grade evidence or that the guideline developer says is high-grade evidence. Okay. The next theme was theme 7, and this was in regards to face validity. One of the proposals was to clarify that or require that if face validity was the option that was taken in terms of validity, that experts other than those involved in developing the measure would be used to assess face validity. So we had quite a lot of comments about that. For example, what does that mean involved in measure development? Because there's lots of different scenarios in and roles that people play in measure development. The other was they thought it was too burdensome. And this is actually an area that the CSAC is going to come back to. And some of the options that they're going to discuss is no change to our current guidance, so developers just choose who they wish to use for systematic assessment of face validity, which could include their own expert panels. Another option would be just to assume the measure has face validity with the developer and its experts at the time of initial endorsement. And if the evidence subcriterion is met and the measure as specified is consistent with the evidence, the question is, does a systematic assessment of face validity offer any additional information, especially at the time of initial endorsement? Sometimes this feels kind of like a check the box, and perhaps it's not work that, you know, we should be requiring or that measure developers should have to do at the time of initial endorsement. And then the third option is, should we be considering moving away from face validity to empirical validity testing being required? And the question would be, should that be for initial endorsement or just for endorsement maintenance? Certainly, if we said this for initial endorsement, that would represent a higher bar and would need to be phased in. For endorsement maintenance, this is actually consistent with the approved recommendations from the Measure Testing Task Force report that testing be expanded on for endorsement maintenance. To date, we haven't really pushed this or implemented this, and so it's something that the CSAC needs to come back to. And the last theme that we identified in the comments, we specifically asked about whether NQF should identify specific minimum thresholds for sample sizes or reliability statistics. And the commenters, by and large, agreed that we should not specify those as minimum thresholds, that a lot of this is context-driven. But several commenters did suggest that we consider power analysis in identifying appropriate sample sizes. So, again, this is something that the CSAC will have to come back to in terms of how we want to pursue that suggestion. It's certainly not something that we would be ready to do immediately and would require some additional thinking and phasing in. So I'm going to stop there and see if you have additional questions or comments. In terms of what our next steps are, is that we have to get back to both the CSAC and HITAC to finish up some of these discussions. Hopefully we will do that over the next month and have something finalized by the time of the next CSAC meeting. And then we can inform you of the final decisions.
Amy?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, that's star 1 for questions or comments. You have a question from Patrick Romano.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Karen. Thank you for the informative presentation. Could you scroll back up to, I think it was theme 4?
Okay. About the health evidence for health outcomes and PROs on the bottom of page 7.
Again, is this document posted yet, or is this?
Yes, it is posted. And we'll send you the specific link, but it's posted with the CSAC and HITAC meeting materials for September 10th, but it's also posted with the page on which we've been reporting on this updated guidance. But we'll send you the specific link after this call.
Okay, great. And the next page, please.
Next page.
Right, that table. Just a quick question about this table. So could you clarify perhaps, we note first that health status is listed in the health outcomes group instead of patient-reported outcomes. I would have thought that health status was a patient-reported outcome, but perhaps there's no implication to that distinction. So if there's some difference in how health outcomes and patient-reported outcomes would be treated, perhaps you could clarify that. And then the second point is, or second question, is on the right box, could you clarify exactly how the first bullet differs from the second bullet? The stated rationale, how does that differ from the description of the path?
Right. Okay, thanks. So good question about health status. And actually, under PRO, we talk about health-related quality of life and function, so we probably kind of put those two together. Health status, you're right, could be reported by the patient. There could be other clinical indicators of health status. So, for example, sometimes readmission measures are classified as health outcomes because they are used as a proxy for deterioration in health status. So I think it really belongs in both places. And in terms of the two bullets, in our measure submission, the key thing is mainly the rationale. But we also, in the measure submission form, ask for developers to give a diagram or just list those relationships. So maybe instead of description, that should say a list, because you're right, the rationale would really be the description.
Okay, right. You might want to just clarify the distinction between those two bullets, if they're actually distinct.
Yeah.
Or to put them together if they're not.
Okay, thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We have no questions or comments at this time.
Okay, so maybe we should just open up and see if there are questions in general about measure submission or what kinds of questions are on your mind, and we can see if there's anything that we can answer or need to get back to you on.
Again, for questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. There are no questions or comments.
So I'm going to ask one other time before we let everyone sign off, is if you have any specific comments about e-measures, whether the three EHR systems is consistent with your experience with ONC or CMS contracts, and also your interest in approval of trial measures, which would include everything, basically having a measure ready for implementation, but has not yet had formal reliability and validity testing.
We have a question from Jody Pearl.
Okay.
Hey, this is actually Terry Christensen from the American Medical Association. I'm wondering if you have reached out to anybody like EHRA to ask vendors directly about that question. I think it's a really good question.
We haven't. We have some of those types represented on our high tech, but you know, it's certainly something we can pursue a little bit further. Thanks.
Yeah, and if you need any contacts, please feel free to let me know, and I can help introduce you.
Okay.
There are no further questions or comments.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us again for the Measure Developer webinar. I think we can give you back 25 minutes. And just a reminder, Ashley, Marcel, and I will be following up with the large majority of you who have measures that are due for maintenance in our upcoming projects to schedule a two-hour conference call to go over your maintenance portfolio and also to go over the CDP improvement changes that we've been making in the last few months. So as usual, if you have anything to share with us, feedback, any follow-up from the questions that Karen asked of you, please feel free to send those to us at maintenance@qualityforum.org. Again, thank you very much, and we look forward to connecting with you soon. Bye-bye.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.